Hey, make sure you catch all the MMQB podcasts, including the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, which comes out every Tuesday, and the MMQB podcast with Peter King on Wednesdays, where this week he will sit down with Steve Young and Broncos safety TJ Ward. Don't miss it. All right, week five is in the books. We had a mad Tom Brady returning to the lineup. The defending champs finally lose to the suddenly unstoppable Falcons. The Cowboys, they keep rolling sans Tony Romo. What does that mean in the long run? All that and much, much, much more on the MMQB 10 Things podcast.
The MMQB presents the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Powered by digital media, find your voice. And now, your hosts, Andy Benoit and Gary Gramley.
Hello and welcome. This is the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Gramling. I am joined, as always, by Andy Benoit. Andy, week five, another wild one. We all know the big headliner was Brady's return, but couple of upsets, couple of games that came down to the wire. It was an interesting week, I'll say that.
It's professional football. It's always going to be interesting. We say each week the difference between your best team and your worst team, and maybe we saw that today in the New England-Cleveland game, so maybe we take one step back and say the second best team and the second worst team, the difference is often not that significant.
Difference between 3 and 30, maybe, but not so much 1 and 32.
Correct.
But in case you missed it, in case you were watching the debate and getting ready pre-gaming for the debate and maybe, I don't know, doing 8 hours of prep for the debate, we're about to run through everything you need to know from Sunday's action. And let's start in Cleveland.
Number one.
Tom Brady was back, and he was angry, Andy. He was furious. He was mad Tom Brady, and his anger is what lifted the Patriots to victory in this game, or so I understand.
Yeah, that narrative, I get sick of that narrative, to be honest with you, because, I hope people mean it facetiously, right? A quarterback's not going to play well angry. Brady's not going to throw the ball harder and more accurately because he's mad about the suspension. That's more, maybe a defensive guy can play angry. Tom Brady's a brilliant QB, and he plays in a system that he owns and he runs, and it works perfectly for him, and that's why he came out today and threw for 400 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, it was, I kept a close eye on the defensive side of the ball for the Patriots just in case number 12 lined up at inside linebacker at any point.
Yep, and then
just
he could
laid
play
a couple people
yeah.
out.
Yeah, good point.
If it happened, I didn't catch it, so I apologize. But yeah, it was, I guess angry Tom Brady or motivated Tom Brady, wherever you want to say it. It was Tom Brady. It looked like Tom Brady facing a team that was overwhelmed from a talent standpoint. And, you know, the game was never really in doubt, even when the Browns came down and then tied it at 7. The Patriots came right back, and especially once Cody Kessler went down and Browns are rotating Terrell Pryor for a little bit with Charlie Whitehurst. I mean, this game was, it was teams in two different classes right now, and teams headed in certainly different directions at this point. But look, Brady, it was interesting to see how we worked with, you know, he had Chris Hogan this time, Martellus Bennett. Those are new guys. We haven't seen him work with them yet. You know, Bennett was certainly used much more as a receiver last week, with Gronk being more of the blocker when Brissett was under center. They both, I didn't see specific snap counts, but it seemed like they both were sort of playing both of those roles. Bennett obviously ended up with the, if you are a fantasy football player, he got you 3 touchdowns, and I'm sure that was a headliner there. But, he was, I thought Gronkowski was a much bigger part of the passing game than he had been, and Chris Hogan made a couple of big plays deep, and yeah, this is the Patriots. They're really good.
I think the story of the game is Gronkowski and Bennett on the field together, because that's what they went for this offseason. I thought the Bennett acquisition in the offseason was the biggest acquisition, or is going to prove ultimately to be as it impacts this season, the biggest acquisition any team made in the NFL. Maybe that was before the Sam Bradford trade, but let's just talk for the sake of it. Because when you go two tight ends, and one of them's Gronkowski, one of them's Bennett, you have every formation available to you. Your flexibility is unmatched, and that is just your formational flexibility. That doesn't account for how defenses must decide to guard you. Who does a defense even put on the field? Do they play nickel against that look? Do they go base and hope that your tight ends don't kill the linebackers downfield? Do you go with cornerbacks on the tight ends and hope you don't get the ball rammed down your throat on the ground? Those are the questions you have to ask. And when you put a guy like Tom Brady overseeing it all, a guy who can run the game at the line of scrimmage, I think that's going to prove to be a borderline unstoppable personnel package for him, just having Gronk and Bennett on the field together, because both of those guys are tremendous receivers. They can be wide receivers if need be, slot receivers, and they're both also very good and very willing run blockers, so your whole running game remains available.
Yeah, you know, I didn't chart the game, but I did notice a lot of linebackers on Bennett and Gronkowski today, and that's not good. That's not going to stop that offense. Now, LeGarrette Blount didn't really get going, but you know, they still did plenty in the passing game, and you figure that's what this team's identity is going to be most weeks. But you know what my favorite and sorry to circle back to the anger thing, but just the whole Patriots motivation thing. Do you remember the Freddie Mitchell thing back, we're talking like Donovan McNabb, Eagles days before, I don't know the Super Bowl numbers anymore, but it was the game played in 2005 after the 2004 season.
Yeah.
And it was Freddie Mitchell, and it was like, oh, he dissed Belichick and Ronnie Harrison, and now the Patriots are fired up for this game. And it was like, it's a Super Bowl. Were they not going to show up for the Super Bowl? Were they just going to be like...
I don't like that. And there's been plenty of years, by the way, where Tom Brady hadn't been suspended or screwed over by the commissioner, and he was still a very good player in a lot of those years. In fact, I believe he won 4 Super Bowls in years that he wasn't, quote-unquote, angry.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Tom Brady's back. And the Patriots are really good. That was really the takeaway today. Maybe as well the Browns are not that good, but yeah. Tom Brady Patriots going to be right there with the Broncos in the end, and maybe the Steelers as far as the AFC representative in Super Bowl 52 goes. 52? What are we on? 51 or 52?
51.
See, I told you I don't know the Super Bowl numbers anymore.
Well, it's because they put them in those stupid Roman numerals and nobody can keep track of them. There's a reason Roman numerals vanished from the world and from society.
I actually kind of like the Roman numerals.
They're
it makes
stupid.
Me feel
They're
smart when I get them right.
Well, yeah, if you sit there and I remember like Super Bowl 29, 30, and when you get to the end of the decade, so to speak, and Super Bowl's miserable. Yeah, I hope they get rid of it.
Number 2.
All right, topic 2, speaking of Super Bowl defending champs, the Broncos go down at home to the Falcons. Now, Trevor Siemian missed this game. Paxton Lynch was under center, first start for the rookie. He looked like a rookie. A lot of stuff was... everything just seemed late. All their timing offensively seemed late. So, I don't know. Did you get a chance to get a good look at this one, Andy?
Not this one. I watched both of these teams on film very closely leading into it, and I can tell you what Atlanta played, because Atlanta plays the same coverage every single week, and it's that Seahawks-style cover 3. So Lynch at least had the advantage of... I don't want to say a predictable defense because that has kind of negative connotations, but he knew what he was going to get picture-wise. Now, if the Falcons can switch up and go man coverage at times, the point is you know what you're getting with the Falcons. They're mostly an execution defense. So the inexperience showed here that there was an opportunity there. They probably had some specific play designs with ideas of beating specific coverages, anticipated coverages, which Denver's done a good job with that this season, and it didn't work out. I think Paxton Lynch is an intriguing player, though. Watching his film from the previous week, how strong-armed he was, the ball has a flick when it comes out. There's a zip to it that you don't see with Siemian. Not that that matters head over heels, but that does matter. At some point in the NFL, that does become a factor, and that's there's going to be a lot there to work with Paxton Lynch. I don't know if it'll be developed or not. But, Gary, Atlanta Falcons now are 4-1. They're doing it with offense. They went on the road and played, I think, the hardest defense in the NFL to play against. and they came out victorious yet again. And the Falcons' offense has been putting up numbers at a historic rate over the first quarter of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, look, this was, you know, the numbers aren't eye-popping. They scored, what did they end up with, 23 points today, and they didn't have huge offense, 372 yardage-wise, but they protected a lead for most of the second half, so they did sort of take their foot off the gas, and look, this wasn't, they didn't do to the Broncos what they did to the Panthers last week, but they moved the ball on the Broncos, and they did some things with Tevin Coleman. They got him in the slot, matched up with linebackers, and he was killing the Broncos. So this was absolutely impressive. Again, you know, Broncos were limited offensively. Vic Beasley ended up with three or three and a half sacks and a couple of forced fumbles today.
I think it was encouraging. He has not looked good so far.
I'll let you tell me later this week what you thought of the tape, because I couldn't, you know, watching the broadcast, I can't see all the coverage. But yeah. Paxton Lynch was holding on to the ball for a long time. Beasley was getting home. He was hitting his spot, which is good. But, I mean, it was taking a long time for Lynch to get the ball out.
And that's not how that offense is designed. So Lynch wasn't comfortable with what he was seeing. Atlanta's coverage, by the way, has been very good the last several weeks, too. So that could be a factor. Desmond Trufant's been outstanding.
Yep.
Their safeties have been pretty good. The strong safeties have been pretty good. The deal with Beasley, his north and south is excellent. He can go straight line very well. He has no pass rushing moves, though, whatsoever outside of that.
Yeah.
He covers too much ground. He takes too long to do the moves. He doesn't wind up in spots he's supposed to be. He actually compromises other guys' pass rushing moves at times. He's just very raw like that. So I will be really eager to see. He got 3.5 sacks. I want to see how he got those sacks, because that's going to be revealing. They badly need – they're not going to be the NFC representative in the Super Bowl if Vic Beasley doesn't develop into a quality pass rusher by Thanksgiving or so.
Yeah, I wouldn't call this one a red flag type of game for the Broncos. They had
no.
a rookie quarterback who very much looked like a rookie quarterback. I mean, there's a reason that everyone thought Paxton Lynch should redshirt this year, and I think you saw it today. But hey, more good news for the Falcons. They're just looking more improved. I mean, we knew at this point they could score, but the defense is better. And like you said, I think it did have a lot to do with Lynch holding on to the ball for too long. But, you know, if this defense is better, that's a big deal going forward for them.
Number three.
Let's go with the Sunday nighter. You loved this matchup. The two teams that run, what do you call this, the McCarthy system? What do we call these offenses?
I call it the West Coast spread system, because the formations are almost always plus split, meaning the receivers, the outside receivers, are outside of the field numbers. Inside the field numbers is a minus split. So it's a spread West Coast type of system is what I call it. Nobody has an exact name for it.
Well, they went head-to-head.
They both run it. They both run it, though. They're the two teams that run it. And what's interesting with the Giants is they run it exactly on time. It's the way you draw it up. And so you see how the coaches want it run. And then the Packers, they sometimes do that, and more often than not, they don't do that, because Rodgers does not play that way. And he has a unique skill set, and you not only live with that, more often than not, you encourage that. You want him playing off-schedule on offense a lot of the time. And some of that has to do with the way his receivers don't win one-on-one the way Victor Cruz and Odell Beckham tend to win one-on-one. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to watch the contrast. And we saw the contrast at times in this game. But I think, Gary, the story of the game, besides Green Bay's pass protection, which was otherworldly, and it's been that way for every week this season now. They were outstanding in the Jacksonville week one, their last game against Detroit. That O-line's right up there with Dallas in terms of execution this season. I think the story, though, is Green Bay played two safeties back deep the entire game, and they were doing that. They had their backup corners in due to injury, so they're protecting the corners, giving them help. You're facing Odell Beckham. You had you're going to want an extra safety there for sure on him. But also, they dared the Giants to beat him on the run game. Green Bay's run defense has been the best in the NFL this season. The Giants hardly even attempted to run the ball against that lighter box. And it's not like they forgot about the run and McAdoo doesn't know what he's doing. It's if you don't attempt to run the ball, it's because you believe you can't. And to believe you can't run the ball against a lighter front, albeit a good one, that's very revealing about both teams here. And that's what decided this game, I thought.
Yeah. No, I'm not particularly surprised that the Giants didn't think they could run the ball on the Packers.
You'd think, though, yeah. In the NFL, you ought to be able to run the ball on insert team when they play two-man. Because
yes.
Not only when you're in two-man, not only are both safeties back, but the corners are having their backs turned to the ball because they're trailing the receivers. So it's like a super version of cover two. Like the whole secondary becomes eliminated from the run defense equation. If you can't run the ball against that, then you plain can't run the ball.
Yeah. Andy, I would have run the ball.
You would have called the runs or you would have actually been the guy running the ball?
Both. I would have been a player coach and run the ball. No, it was, you know, I thought Ben McAdoo got a little bit more creative with what they did with the passing game. I thought they made it a point to get Odell Beckham a little more involved, which was, I thought they pretty much gave up on him. And I don't know if it was all the extracurricular stuff on Monday night that made him give up on him, but I thought they just gave up on getting the ball to their, by far, their best player. So that was a little bit encouraging. Eli was, you know, he was shaky all night. And
he was. I agree with you. I think they need to be, and it's not in the system to do this. It's not the nature of their offense, but some guys transcend that, and Beckham transcends any system. They need to be moving him around more because it gives the defense so much more to process, because that's the guy they fear most, and if they're putting a safety over the top of him, then in theory, you're often going to impact two defenders by moving Beckham around more. Paul Perkins had a nice little backfield screen catch for 11 yards with Beckham as a ghost reverse on the jet sweep. So Beckham went left, the screen went right.
That was the kind of stuff. Design.
Yeah, and that's an easy little wrinkle, and they'd kind of set that up because they'd put Beckham in motion a few more times. They'd had him come out of the backfield. That's the way this offense needs to look. You can't just have Beckham lining up out wide and hogging a safety and hoping he wins on quick slants every game, because they did that tonight. Beckham had three very good quick slants, and those don't add up the same way. They don't sustain drives the same way. They're a staple, but that doesn't mean they're the whole offense. I think Beckham needs to be moved around more, and they did it a little bit tonight, but they need to grow on it.
I want to circle back to what we talked about at the top of this topic. The Packers, you know, pass protection was outstanding. They had the clock on it, the NBC clock, a couple times. You notice it if you watch the game. It was getting up to 4, 5, 6 seconds for Aaron Rodgers to look across the field here. It took just as, you know, I'm going to give up on that joke. I was going to make a debate joke about someone talking for a long time about Donald Trump going over the time limit, because that's all my Twitter feed was during this game. But you know what? I didn't watch the debate, so I'm not even going to go there. But I
watched football as well, and I came away feeling very good about myself. I'll put
it
that way.
Exactly. I have a much better outlook for this country now. But I want to ask you about Lane Taylor, who everyone sort of gave this quizzical reaction when Josh Sitton was let go right before the season, which was certainly justified. But Lane Taylor is the new left guard for the Packers, and I just wanted to know what you thought of his play thus far, especially in light of the fact that Aaron Rodgers had so much time tonight.
Yeah, he's one of five good puzzle pieces for him, and it's funny because I've been asked about Lane Taylor quite a bit the last few weeks. I don't have his name in my notes a whole lot, so I haven't seen him flash in the run game necessarily. Guards, they don't really show up in pass protection as much, unless you're running stunts against them. But to not have his name in the notes, that's a good thing, too. The offensive line's the one position where you don't want to show up in film notes necessarily. I think Lane Taylor's playing great for him. I think David Bakhtiari is probably who I'd put first team All-Pro at left tackle if I had to vote today. And it's worth noting that Josh Sitton in Chicago is also playing very well. So both sides won in that equation there. I don't know if Josh Sitton's happy about being a Bear, but the Bears have the best guard tandem in the league, arguably, with Sitton and Kyle Long. So it's worked out fine. But Green Bay's offensive line as a whole they are on such the same page. It's outstanding. And part of it, you wonder, teams are afraid and reluctant to blitz Aaron Rodgers, and maybe that's a little bit of it. This offensive line has had less to sort out mentally. And Rodgers, they talked about it Sunday night, he's so good with his snap counts. That also adds up after a while.
Yeah.
You get defensive linemen pausing just a little bit. That helps offensive linemen as well. But it's a great group of players, and they've done a good job putting that unit together.
Absolutely.
Number four.
Are the Dallas Cowboys for real? I don't know about you, Andy. I thought Cincinnati was going to go in with the extra rest today, and I thought they were going to win in Dallas. I'm not saying the Cowboys, I don't think they're the 4-12 team they were a year ago when Tony Romo was out, but I also wasn't so sure they were the 10-6, 11-5 team they were on pace to be at this point. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, the Cowboys were in complete control of this game for 60 minutes. Where are we with this team at this point?
Well, they're winning. I always look for teams that are winning with their style of play, because that's what's sustainable. They're winning with their style of play there in Dallas. It's interesting with Ezekiel Elliott, because he was so impatient the first few weeks of the season. And as I mentioned, I kind of got enamored with how quick he was, that I didn't do a good job of understanding, hey, he's a little too quick here. And the Cowboys did that. It's their job. They understand what they need from their running back. They told him to slow down, and since doing that, which they told him that heading into the week 3 Chicago game, so 3 games ago, he's been absolutely sensational for him. Their offensive line's also played a lot better, a zone blocking line. Travis Frederick's probably, if I'm sticking with the all-pro theme, he's probably my center right now. And that's how they're built to play. And it's become very easy on Dak Prescott. The only thing that gives me pause is that their pass rush is still very poor. And I don't know exactly how it did against Cincinnati, and it had chances to tee off because they were up big. But in the big scheme of things, there's two teams right now with excellent records and the pass rush that's not good enough to take them all the way, and that's Atlanta and that's Dallas. So something has to change there. Maybe DeMarcus Lawrence being back in the lineup will help. Hey, maybe you get a boost from Randy Gregory sometime around Christmas if he's back. That's kind of optimism talking. They need other guys, though, to play. They need answers there in the pass rush. The rest of the defense has been very good this season.
They're ready. Lawrence popped up a couple times today. Their pass rush is better. I thought their coverage was excellent today, too. Ezekiel Elliott, his 60-yard touchdown run was just a really cool play. I don't even know how else to explain it. He made one little cutback at the line of scrimmage, and then it was a straightforward sprint, and he was so fast that he outran the angle of like the 3 second and third level defenders who would have converged on him. And it was just, it was neat looking.
Yeah.
No, like that's as well as being a really good play. It was a neat looking play.
That's how you win rushing titles. Someone made a great point to me, because I think TJ Yeldon of the Jags, I love his game. I think he's an outstanding player, very intriguing. The numbers aren't there. And I said something to a coach once. I think Yeldon's a guy that could contend for a rushing title. And he said he doesn't have that kind of speed, though. You win rushing titles with the breakaway runs that pad 50 yards onto your stats here and there. You do four of those a year, and that's an extra 200 yards.
Yep.
That's the difference. Not that these plays also don't matter from a football standpoint, but that's how you win rushing titles. You have that breakaway speed to pad your yards. And Elliott, I think, is going to wind up being the guy that wins that rushing title this year.
He looked really good, and look, that offensive line, I mean, they pushed around the Bengals front four today, and that's...
And nobody's done that yet, by the way. Domantopeko is one of the hardest nose shades to play against, and we all know what Geno Atkins brings.
Yeah.
So to push around the Bengals defensive line, that's a huge statement.
But let's talk about the elephant in the room here. Dallas Cowboys are 4-1. Tony Romo, at some point, is going to be healthy enough to play, you would think. Who's your starter? I mean, and if you knew you were getting, 2014 Tony Romo, I don't think it's a debate. I guess what sticks out in my mind when I think of 2015 Tony Romo is the guy who played Thanksgiving Day and sort of looked mentally unprepared and just sort of overwhelmed by the game. And not to say he would be a terrible quarterback if he came back, but I'm not sure he's the same guy that he was 2 years ago at this point. So when you're looking at Romo and Dak, what do you do at this point?
I don't know. That's a hard one for me. My inclination, because that Panthers game, yeah, he looked iffy, but he had some good moments the week before against Miami, I remember last year as well, where he was running the game at the line of scrimmage. The issue with Romo's age, I don't think we've looked at his game much and said, hey, he's wearing down, he can't make the throws anymore.
Yeah.
It's that we look at his game, he says, hey, his back got broken again. And so that maybe will solve itself. Either if Romo stays healthy, I think you play him, and I think he can play at a high level. And if he doesn't, you give him a hook after three or four games, I suppose. But if he can't stay healthy, now you have your answer. I'm glad I'm not the one that has to make this decision, because Dak Prescott's been exactly what they need. My inclination is, though, you go back to Tony Romo, because they're not. It's not like they're winning because Romo's out of the lineup right now.
God, if Romo was coming back next week, if he was ready next week, you'd go Romo?
I'd go Romo. But he's not going to be. And that's the other thing. With Dak Prescott playing so well, they conveniently don't need Romo to be ready next week. He can fully heal this time. He didn't do that last year. They had to rush him back. He got hurt again. He actually hurt his shoulder, I believe it was. So they have options now. But keep in mind, 4-1's a nice record. That whole NFC is pretty much over 500. Two of the other teams are over 500 as well. So you can't rest on your laurels and wait forever. You do have to play the guy you think will give you the best chance to win now. But they have a little bit of breathing room with Prescott playing so well. They can give Romo that extra week or so, maybe here or there.
Yeah. And anecdotally, and again, you'll be able to tell me for sure later next or later this week, but anecdotally, I thought they used a little more zone read stuff, a little more read option stuff with Dak and Ezekiel Elliott than they had earlier this season. I thought they were going to use it pretty heavily, considering you had two guys coming out of that college system week one, and I thought that was a little wrinkle they could use early in the season. But I didn't really see much of it until today.
They've done some of it in previous weeks. They'd used it in spurts. My guess is one reason they might use it today is the Bengals play with two safeties back deep a lot of times, which means that the defensive end is not the furthest outside contained player. And so those defensive ends, in theory, could be a little more active. They might be more inclined to crash hard inside because the cornerbacks are still the outside furthest contained player, or the safety is, depending on the coverage. But the point is, most teams, the defensive end sets the edge. In Cincinnati, they don't play that way. They try to spill you to the perimeter. So maybe the Cowboys felt that the defensive ends would crash hard, and they're going to do that anyway, so we might as well make a zone read element to A, make them pay for that once or twice with our QB running, or B, make them think once or twice about crashing hard, get them to back off a little bit.
Yep. Okay, hang on one second, Andy. We're 5 weeks into the NFL season now, and maybe you've noticed some trends. You have some thoughts about who's underrated, who's overrated. Well, now's not a bad time to get in the action and play like the pros at mybookie.net. It's the most exciting online experience for sports fans. MyBookie features real Vegas odds and incredible player props on every football game. Now, did your game already kick off? No worries. MyBookie has live in-game odds updated in real time, so it is never too late to make a play. It's optimized for smartphone users for nonstop action on the go. Go online, type MyBookie in your browser, and sign up today. Use the promo code 10things, that's 10THINGS, to be entered into their $1 million prize pool, or call 844-722-2387. Join the thousands of online players already playing. Only the biggest, only the best, only at MyBookie. Sign up today.
Number 5.
All right, Andy. Topic 5, a relative meltdown for the Eagles. Multiple turnovers in a game. They turn it over twice. They came out real slow in Detroit. The Lions beat them. The Lions beat them in a game that the Lions usually figure out a way to lose, I guess, was the surprise in the end here. But I don't know. I mean, I know you had a closer eye on this game. What did you see from Wentz? I mean, is this worrisome at all going forward for you?
No, it's they lost their fourth game of the season. I would leave it at that. Ryan Matthews had a horrible fumble. He's done that a few times in his career. And I thought the Wentz interception, I'm sure he's disappointed in himself with that play, because on the surface, it appears like it came late in the game. That did not come in like any sort of garbage or desperation time. They were down two. That was the first possession with, I believe, like a minute 20 left. And he went deep, and what amounted to, by the time the ball arrived, it amounted to double coverage. That can't possibly be what they set out to do at the front of that. I think the young QB got a little impatient there. So, yeah, it was a meltdown. They lost a game that they were in total position to win. They'd come back, and that happens. But you learn from that, and you move on.
That was not a meltdown. What San Diego does on a weekly basis is
mini
a meltdown.
Yeah, you're right. Mini meltdown. Mini meltdown.
It was also – and look, it was a – I thought at the back end of that interception, that was Wentz's first NFL interception, great play by Darius Slade tracking that ball and coming down with it. Because I think when you – the double coverage wasn't quite there. And I think when you have the one defensive back running with that ball, I mean, how often does that get intercepted?
Yeah, fair point. And maybe Wentz wouldn't regret it in that sense. I didn't think Aguilar ran the best of routes on that play either. Aguilar really didn't have a great game in this one. The Eagles receivers, they looked much quicker early in the season than they did a year ago. I thought this week they looked more like the Eagles receivers we saw of last year, where there was a little bit of a lethargic element to the way they were running their routes.
Yeah. Well, nice win for the Lions. Good to see them back on the board. A bit of an emotional win for Jim Caldwell. He kind of needed this one at this point because it looked like things were going to completely crumble. And the only other thing I wanted to say about this game was free Wendell Smallwood for the Eagles. I want more of Wendell Smallwood in there.
Remind me who Wendell Smallwood is.
He's their rookie back.
Their running back?
Had a nice little game against the Steelers.
Yeah, I remember I typed I typed his name on film notes a few weeks ago. But what does he do well? Why do you want him in the lineup?
I think he's a more versatile version of Ryan Matthews. Not quite the runner, but also maybe not so fumble prone, and also a little more flexible with what you can do with him in the passing game.
Well, look,
he's somewhere between. He lives in that area between Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles.
If that's the case, if that's the case, then we will see more of him eventually, because what this Eagles offense does a great job with is creating mismatches for their running backs through misdirection and quick screens and quick passes and getting those guys on the perimeter in creative ways. And Matthews has been very spotty in that realm. I think Matthews is a good player. I like him as a runner. But he's spotty in some of the areas where they need him to be solid. He's not his hands, that's the issue. He fumbles sometimes, and he doesn't always catch what you throw at him, even though he catches some good stuff. So Wendell Smallwood, your guy, your fifth-round pick I see here, he will get more reps later in the year. I hope not, because I want to see Matthews play well. But Smallwood fits what they want to do style-wise based on what you just said.
No, that's my thing. I think Ryan Matthews is a good player, too. I think he's just not the right fit in this offense.
Yeah.
Although he did have a team-leading 5 receptions today, now that I look at it.
Number 6.
All right, well, let's go on to topic 6, staying in the NFC North. Well, we talked about the Lions, so we'll say staying in the NFC North.
Okay.
Vikings remain undefeated. This was a dominant performance coming off the short week. Texans coming in. I don't know. There doesn't really seem to be – there's no overwhelming sort of offensive threat on this team with Adrian Peterson out, and I think that's what sort of threw people off early on. But there's no weakness, and everything's a strength.
I'm not going to sit here and say they got better with Adrian Peterson out, because I don't believe that. They did get more diverse, though, because Jerick McKinnon stylistically, he can do more things in your running game than Peterson can. Peterson's not an outside runner, and he's not a patient runner. So it's pretty much hand the ball and let him hit it up inside. Double teams at the point of attack and inside, guards and center, guards and tackles. Double team, go north and south, and let Peterson do his thing. that's a very limited running game stylistically. McKinnon, you see shotgun runs now. You see some delay elements where there's blockers become a factor and angles become a factor. That's not Peterson's game. So they're a more creative offense without Peterson just by necessity. And in some ways, I think that's made them a better all-around offense.
No, I think that's fair. And then obviously they're overwhelming opponents right now defensively.
Well, their defense has about half of those guys were first round picks of this team.
Yeah.
And they've come up all together. They've played together. They've been in now Mike Zimmer's scheme for this is their third year. And the guys who weren't first-round picks, some of them are their best players. Linval Joseph, Danielle Hunter's becoming into that. Eric Kendricks, the second-rounder. Even Terrence Newman's been solid at times for them, which he's in like the seventh of what I thought is his last year of his career, the seventh year in a row.
Yep.
It's an extremely well-coached and congruent group, and you know what you're going to get with them, too. There's another team that's not just 5-0, but winning with their style of play. So that's a very legitimate 5-0 there in Minnesota.
Yeah. On the other side of the coin, and I'll bring this up, and maybe you don't want to engage with me here, Andy, but we'll talk about it anyway. So Brock Osweiler, he completed 19 passes, and if you told me before the game that Brock Osweiler was going to complete 19 passes against the Vikings defense, I would have said, wow, did the Texans attempt 85 passes in this game? So he put it was an ugly day. He had like a 56 rating or something like that. But I don't think, and I'm ready to say this with more and more confidence, I don't think Brock Osweiler is good enough to be a starting quarterback for a team with playoff aspirations. He can get them to the playoffs because they're in the AFC South and someone's got to win that division. But the thing that bothers me about the Texans is there's no plan B, and you have Bill O'Brien, and they've drafted one quarterback in the last 5 years. The Patriots have drafted two quarterbacks in the last 5 years, and the Texans have only drafted one. What are you going to do? I mean, is it time to take a look and see what they have in Tom Savage? Or I mean, obviously they got to go with Osweiler for a few more weeks, but this has been really bad. I think he's just not very good.
I think you're being harsh. I'll engage, but I'm not going to like agree by any means. He was not sharp last week. He was inaccurate on a number of throws. And some of it, he's getting a little antsy against pressure and then what he perceives as pressure. And that's always a bad sentence with a QB, what he perceives as pressure.
Yeah.
Because the pressure's not there. So that... Yeah, he's not playing his best, but I think the receivers have been imprecise at times. I think some of those interceptions, in fact, I know they have been on the wide receivers, not on Osweiler early in the year. So it's still a process that's unfolding and coming together. It's also not an easy system to pick up. New players all around you, a fast system, they put a lot on your plate. There'll be some highs and lows, but no, you know, you're not going to Tom Savage now.
He's been in the program for all these years, and apparently he's the only guy they've even attempted to develop over the last 5 years.
Well, and they developed him so much.
They bring in.
They were so thrilled with their development of him that they went out and signed Brock Osweiler. So.
That's what I'm saying. How did they? Oh, I,
well, they
I,
haven't
they
been in position to
nuts.
Draft. It's not like they haven't taken a QB in 5 years, but where have they been drafting? They're often 9-7 or around there, so they're picking in the 18 to 20 range. That's not the EJ Manuel range of the draft, so to speak. I think we need to just pump the brakes. Give it some time. They're in a bad division. That helps. They benefit from that. Their defense is still excellent, even without Watt.
They're squandering the J.J. Watt years. This is why this always gets to me when we talk about the Texans. They're squandering J.J. Watt's prime by not getting a good enough quarterback in there.
That's not an issue this year.
I think Osweiler has big man syndrome, too. I think he's like, the tall pitchers, the 6'9", 6'10 pitchers who can't find the plate because they can't repeat their mechanics. I think I think there's a little bit of that with Osweiler.
All right, I thought you meant like he was cocky because he's tall. So
I withdraw
my snicker, but...
I understand he's... I think he's a very nice guy. I haven't heard anything negative about him, but I just don't think he throws the football very accurately, and I think that's problematic.
Number 7.
All right, we'll go on. Something to make me a little bit happier. Buffalo Bills getting back on track.
Oh, I forgot about this Bills thing we do every
They go out to the Coliseum and win again. Three straight wins for the Bills. This was they're doing nice things, and LeSean McCoy looks like and honestly, I think LeSean McCoy is moving himself into the if a non-quarterback can win MVP, which he probably can't, but he's in like the offensive player of the year conversation. He's been unbelievable the last couple of weeks.
He was very good today. Now, they faced the Rams defense that was minus three of their starters. Everybody but Aaron Donald on the starting line was out. But that's also a deep Rams defense. So,
yeah.
And their defense has been – really, it's been winning more at the back seven than the front four. And so it's still an impressive achievement. McCoy had 150 yards rushing. I believe 107 of them came out of a two-back set. So Jerome Felton being on the field with him a lot. And they were able to do some gap scheme runs with that, meaning they got their pull blockers going. They ran draws with McCoy, which is a perfect run for him because it creates space. It forces patience and allows you to – that's where you dance. You can dance on a draw play. And, they look very, very good under Anthony Lynn, an offensive coordinator. Here's the theme of the show, and I promise I'm not going to say this again, but here's another team that's winning with its style of play. It's not just that they've won three in a row. They've beaten Arizona, a quality team. New England, even without Brady, it's still a tough team to face in New England. Mm-hmm. And they went on the road, first time since 2004 that they've won on the West Coast, I believe. And they beat a Rams team that's 3-1. And they did it with their style. Their defense is swarming again, too. They're back to blitzing. They're back to disguising. These are what the Bills were supposed to be all along. And really, Gary, if you think about all they've had in this whole year, because Baltimore played them well, and it was a tight game, and they lost the game, and two teams with defensive fistfights.
Yep.
Really, the Bills had one horrible performance on Thursday Night Football, and that's been the only bad part of that in their entire training camp with injuries and suspensions, I guess. But that's been only their bad part. Is that really their only bad part of the season, though, is the one embarrassing loss against the Jets. And I think every team has one of those every year. You're going to lose embarrassingly at least once a year. Theirs just happened in week two on national TV.
Exactly. And especially with the Thursday night, I mean, those games are a crapshoot anyway because of the, you know, everyone runs out sort of a truncated playbook
in
preparation
in
for it. But.
Especially in week two where you guys are not, they're already coming off of week one where they got dinged around, their bodies aren't used to it yet. A short week, which it's the same for the Jets too. But yeah, the Bills, your Western New York thing, maybe we'll keep doing that because I think the Bills, I don't think they're a dynamic team, but they have done a very good job winning their style of football the last few weeks.
Yeah, everything's going well in Buffalo now. It's all coming together.
Number 8.
All right, where it's not coming together, the Chargers again. The Chargers are such a sad reality show now. I mean, they did it again. So this week it was, first of all, I'll say this. So Antonio Gates returned this week, and he got the memo while he was out, apparently, because first catch he makes, he turns around, and he gets it stripped and loses a fumble. And the Chargers at one point, going back to last week, had five straight possessions that ended in a turnover, which when Phillip Rivers is your quarterback, I mean, you know, this isn't this shouldn't be happening. It just shouldn't be happening. So Melvin Gordon loses another one late that sets up a Raiders touchdown. Chargers come back. They're down 10. They get the touchdown. They get the ball back. Rivers has him in field goal range. The rookie punter bobbles the snap on the game-tying field goal, and that's how they go down this week. So they're finding new and exciting ways to lose games here. Drew Kaser I know you're not a special teams guy, Andy, but just to show you that special teams do matter.
I believe Drew Kaser, they matter. I just don't understand them. Go ahead.
Drew Kaser, along with botching that snap, which is a perfectly good snap, also had I believe it was a 17-yard punt that set up one of the Raiders' touchdowns. And that was like his first punt in a while because the Chargers were either scoring or turning the ball over.
Here's what I know, because I'm looking at our outline here, and our researcher Jeff Irwin poses the question, when do we start blaming the coaching for the Chargers' numerous mistakes? Mike McCoy's not not calling for fumble plays. He's not saying, hey, guys, you know, be loose with the ball on this one. That's not a coaching thing. So, and Mike McCoy is probably going to wind up being the fall guy for this because you're not going to fire the whole team. Mike McCoy is not the one that's losing these games right now, though.
I mean, honestly, I think it's just insanity that we're even talking about Mike McCoy's job security at this point. I mean, it's who's going to win games with that team? And under these ridiculous circumstances as well, these you know, it's the running back you traded up for in the first round last year can't hang onto the ball, and you know, your rookie punter is botching snaps, and your free agent receiver catches a ball and forgets he's carrying a football and loses a fumble last week. And I mean, this isn't, you know, if you have a different head coach, I guess the plus side would be you're probably not protecting leads so often. You're just getting blown out of the building some days. But this whole McCoy on the hot seat thing is unbelievable to me. It's like if you're looking past the box score, there's no way you think Mike McCoy is on the hot seat there. He's too good a coach.
I agree with you, but that's not how it works in the NFL sometimes.
Well, that's unfair, but Raiders, another cardiac win here. Good for them. So they move on to 4-1. They are right in the thick of things in the NFC West. AFC West. I can't get my AFC and NFC straight this year.
Yeah,
it's a little backwards
the last few weeks.
Well, let's calm ourselves down, Andy, because we have to move on to topic 9, the lightning-ish round.
Number 9.
Let's jump into it. Let's see how fast we can go through it this week. You ready?
All right, and how we're doing it, you're going to go and I'm going to respond, and that's what makes it lightning-ish. I mean, that's going to be quick.
Okay. You ready?
Oh, you're not going to do it. I can tell you're not going to do it.
No, I'll do it.
All right, go. Here we go.
Redskins, another win. They're up to 3-2. They beat the Ravens of Baltimore. This was Ravens attack Josh Norman. Rashad Perriman, very close on that. It was actually called a touchdown. It was overturned. It clearly should have been overturned in the end zone. What I wanted to ask you about from this game, though, is this, Andy. There was a play where C.J. Mosley picked off a pass, ran it back, sort of reached for the end zone, ends up fumbling. The ball goes out of bounds in the end zone, recovered by no one, out of bounds in the end zone. But the Redskins get the ball back on the 20-yard line after this. And they pick up. The interception happened when they were on the 3-yard line. So they actually picked up 17 yards by throwing an interception on this play. I do not like
rule.
I do not like that rule.
It's,
I think,
flawed.
It comes back to the spot of the fumble, right?
No, I think if you want to make, I understand the logic of making that thing a touchback. I think it's a touchback for the fumbling team. Wouldn't
touchback
you say
for the fumbling team? So wait, do you
if
put the
Mosley
Ravens
fumbles
back?
The ball, then the Ravens go back to the 20 instead of where he fumbled the ball. So it's kind of like an inverse touchback. They go to Washington's 20.
Inverse touchback. You didn't have me until inverse touchback. I like that.
Yeah, a back touch, if you will.
I think that's a
fairer solution. The question is, would guys start? Is there an advantage to fumbling purposefully? But there wouldn't be, because you only would do that if it's inside the 20. So that needs. They've got it backwards. They give the ball to the wrong team there. I agree that it's a bad rule.
I agree. And please head over to Twitter. Let Andy and I know. Andy_Benoit. Gramling_SI, let us know what you think of the inverse touchback, or what you want to call the inverse touchback when we present it to the competition committee, guerrilla style, next
offseason.
And if
you don't like it, if you think it's stupid, then suggest something else.
But yeah, that rule should change. That's a dumb rule. Next lightning round item here. I used to coach a little league baseball when I was a younger man. And, you know, one of the things you tell the kids, you can't catch every ball cleanly. Sometimes you just knock it down. Keep it in front of you. Just keep it in front of you type of thing. And Sammy Coates really took that to heart today. He was knocking down a lot of passes. He had a lot of trouble catching passes. I guess it turned out he had cut his hand, and they stitched it up, and he came out in the second half. But this was what was unbelievable. This was what was unbelievable about this game was I counted 5 Sammy Coates drops, each one kind of increasingly worse than the last. And he still finished with 6 catches for 139 and 2 touchdowns, including a 72-yarder.
Yeah,
so
which they opened the game with. And they've opened the game with him the last few weeks now that way. we're going to stretch the defense and make the defense play on its heels right away, and Sammy Coates is the guy we're going to do that with. They seem to always have one of those in Pittsburgh, don't they? It was Mike Wallace a few years ago, then it was Martavis Bryant, and now this year it looks like it's Sammy Coates. If they ever get the receivers to all play together at some point, like actually be on the field together, I don't see how anyone would ever stop that offense.
I don't know. I guess we'll worry about it next year when Martavis Bryant is conceivably back. But, Sammy Coates kind of had that reputation for bad hands at Auburn, and, it was out there today. He was electric, and he also was just knocking stuff down. Oh, one other thing from that game. That was apparently the last time the Steelers will ever wear the Bumblebee uniforms. Are you going to miss them?
Absolutely not. I do not like the Bumblebee uniforms.
Oh.
I'm not a fan of those at all. And I'm a uniforms guy, too. I love all the little details in uniforms. I can tell you anything about any uniform. I don't understand the Bumblebee ones. I don't like watching the film because you can't see the numbers very well. So, good riddance, Bumblebee. Bring back the if they want a third. I guess they can't do it. Remember, they used to do yellow helmets as their third uniform.
Yeah.
They're back to inverse again. They just kind of reverse their whole uniform sometimes and would go yellow helmets. But the league doesn't allow you to change helmets now in the middle of the season anymore. Safety issues. So we'll have to figure out something else.
I didn't
know
that.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Yeah, apparently they got like a cease and desist from the Hamburglar, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
So,
all right.
They couldn't work out any sort of crossover deal with McDonald's and had to get rid of them.
Very good. Very good. We won't have to hear that joke ever again either, I guess.
Next one, we got Bears-Colts. Colts allow 522, 397 passing for Brian Hoyer, and they still win because they have Andrew Luck, and they made a couple plays here. But, the Colts also were on the – they told the NFL they wanted to play the week after London rather than taking their bye there. So that's why they were playing this week. We had gotten a couple questions about that, but seems like it worked out. Nice win for Indy, one they certainly needed.
I wonder if they really told the league that, or if the league said, hey, Jim Irsay, we need somebody to play after their bye in London. We can't have byes after the London game every week. We need to see if this can work the other way. I don't know. It's speculation. Good win. We've talked about some teams playing their style and winning. There's also something to be said for finding a way to win when you're playing very poorly, because right now the Colts are in that category. They don't know who they are yet, right? They can't win playing their style because they don't know what that style is quite yet.
Yep. And the Titans beat the Dolphins.
Bad loss, right, for Miami to go to 1-4. That just feels like it's going sour quickly.
It really is. And I think I'm ready to demote the Dolphins to the AFC South. Which makes geographic sense anyway.
Even then, they're not going to win. They didn't win today in the AFC South.
I know.
Tennessee ran all over them, and Cleveland ran all over them a few weeks ago, I remember, and it was not – their run defense is flawed. That's what I'm getting at. They've got gaps in the run defense that have been exposed, and it's a second-level issue mainly. I don't think that linebacking core – and they've had injuries there, but the linebacking core has struggled. Tennessee
– But on the plus side, the Dolphins can't cover anyone either because they're running a converted wide receiver out there as their second cornerback.
They have issues. Yeah, you're right. It's a bad run defense team that has no cornerbacks. I don't know what's up with Byron Maxwell, by the way. Did he play in this game?
I didn't see if he was out there today, but
that benching, there had to be something because he got benched in the Thursday night game last week. And it looks like he came off the benching, so he did play. He returned to the starting lineup. There had to have been something else going on there because he had not been playing poorly.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Dolphins, by the way, they can thank Cody Parkey for their one win this year. It was that overtime game they beat the Browns when Parkey missed all those field goals.
Yeah, boy, take them when you can get them, I guess.
Yep.
I hope they give Gase enough time to do – they better not fire Gase over this. I mean, it looks like the team's in need of a rebuilding, at least if it goes like this another few weeks.
Yep. All right, that was it for the lightning round.
A little better this week.
That was really short. Do you want to go back and just read the same thing over again?
No. No. I think we're good. We don't do that on this podcast.
Oh. All right. We'll go on to topic 10 then.
Number 10.
The weekly awards. Andy, do you want to go first here?
Sure, I'll go offensive player. I'm giving it to LeSean McCoy. The 150 yards rushing, created some of them on his own. That's a team that doesn't have a lot of receivers to threaten over the top, so you know you have to run the ball against extra bodies at times, and McCoy looked like the LeSean McCoy from. He's looked like McCoy all these years, even though his numbers haven't been there, but he looks like a rushing title contender.
Yep. I'll give it to a running back too. I'm going to give it to Ezekiel Elliott with the assist to their O-line. Ronald Leary filling in for Lyle Collins now, and the usual guys across. And they were, they just bullied the Bengals today. Great win for the Cowboys.
For my defensive player, I'm going Micah Hyde for the Packers. He didn't show up at all in the TV game against. On Sunday night against New York, and that's a good thing in his case. He played the slot against Sterling Shepard, a good solid slot receiver. He had safety help over the top. That was within the design of the scheme. But I give it to Hyde, and almost as a representation of that Packers secondary, I love two-man coverage. When it plays out well, it's almost impossible to beat. And they played extremely well in two-man coverage on Sunday night in Green Bay.
I'm giving it to a DB in that game as well. I'm going to give it losing effort. I'm going to give it to Janoris Jenkins. They, Giants DBs had to cover for 5-6 seconds basically every play tonight. And
yep.
And Jenkins did a nice job against Jordy Nelson. Ended up with he actually had two picks. One was a deflected pick, which whatever. But second one was a nice little play on the ball.
And he had an end zone in a breakup that was even more impressive than either.
Yes,
either of those.
That
other
was
plays
a great
too.
Play.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's had a nice season for them. That performance tonight was emblematic of the way he's played all along. It's interesting, all the Giants' big acquisitions have played well. Even although Olivier Vernon hasn't had the sacks, and he needs to pick that up because that pass rush is limited, he's still been sensational in run defense, and he's still been disruptive at times as a pass rusher. Jenkins has played well. I like Eli Apple's game as well. So, and Damon Harrison, snacks. I think he's been what you expect. The Giants, it's a little disappointing to be 2-3 and have all your big money guys playing as well as you'd hoped.
They have the offense has 8 offensive touchdowns and I think 10 turnovers now. I mean,
that's not a good ratio. That's the
problem right now. Not the new guys, but this best part of the week right here. Andy Benoit, special teams player of the week. Who you got, Andy?
I have Chris Banjo for the Packers because he's the one I saw. He was on the sideline when I saw him. He may have even been dinged. I saw him and I thought, oh, he's a special teamer. And then Al Michaels, who, have you noticed, he always uses the word maven when describing a special teamer. He says he's a special teams maven. He called Banjo a maven. Then he called someone else a maven like within 20 seconds after that and didn't realize he did it. And I forget, it was like a stat guy or something for NBC. Anyway, Chris Banjo, special teams maven, and he showed up on the sidelines in this game, and that's what I noticed. The other punts I fast-forwarded.
I'm going to give it to Adam Vinatieri. 5 more kicks today. Hit from 54 and 53 included in there. 5 for 5. He's made 38 straight now. And if he doesn't go 5 for 5 today, that game is at least going to overtime, if not going to the Bears. So Adam Vinatieri is still awesome. Andy, who is your coach of the week?
Yeah, my coach of the week, I'm going Anthony Lynn of the Buffalo Bills. I thought their offense has looked better each game that he's been calling the plays for them. And you know I like Greg Roman as well. I think he's a good coach. So this is a true compliment to Anthony Lynn. And he's done some unique things with formations. At times, frankly, I thought they were a little predictable out of certain formations in the first game against Arizona. And there's been a marked change there where they've gotten better out of those formations and then employed them differently. So we're seeing them correct weaknesses on the fly, or at least what I can perceive is what you'd call a weakness from watching from afar like this. Anthony Lynn doing a nice job. And Tyrod Taylor's playing a lot smoother under him, too.
Nice. I'm going to give it to Rod Marinelli, and I don't have a really specific reason for it. Just watching that game, the Bengals weren't getting shut down, but they were. It was such a struggle for them to move the ball. Even their long drives, it was just they were scratching and clawing for everything they got. Cowboys were flying around. I thought their defensive backs in the snippets I saw, when you can see what's happening in coverage, they were. they were a bit handsy, and perhaps the Cowboys knew they could get away with some stuff with this specific officiating crew, but you know, a little Seahawks style there in the deep secondary. Yep. But yeah, Cowboys were outstanding today defensively, and really just all around, just absolutely ran away with that game. Andy, that's a show.
Hey.
Thanks, as always, to our researcher, Jeff Irwin, and to the excellent folks at Digital Media who always make us sound so good. And thank you to all of you out there for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, MyBookie.net. Please support them the way they support our show. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this podcast, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen, including emmqb.com, si.com, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.